This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
We need to look at the quality of medicines that saves the lives of mothers and children who are living at the cross-border areas of our eight of all the IGAD countries.
That's Fatuma Adan, who heads the IGAD Health and Social Division on the impact of counterfeit drugs in Africa. Details coming up also. Today is World Refugee Day, and we focus on Uganda, which hosts Africa's largest refugee population. The LGBTI community in the African continent has been celebrating the recent decriminalization of same-sex activities in Botswana. And a group of South African teenagers has assembled a four-seater airplane and is flying it across the continent. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Uganda hosts Africa's largest refugee population, about 1.25 million, mostly South Sudanese. Health workers warn that the refugees infected with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, are not being properly tracked for treatment. They say the problems include ignorance, stigma, and refugee mobility. Halima Atumani reports from Uganda's Adjumani district as part of VOA's coverage of World Refugee Day.
45-year-old South Sudanese refugee Rose Amonyi knows how damaging HIV can be. She's lived with it for 20 years. Her husband infected her and then died of AIDS, leaving her to care for herself and an HIV-positive daughter. I have other children. Because of difficulties of school fees, most of them got married. They got married when they were still young. There was nobody to pay for their school fees. Poverty is the biggest challenge for HIV-positive refugees in Uganda like Amoni, who acknowledge their status and get treatment. But Ugandan health workers in Adjumani district say fewer than 1,000 refugees are on record as being HIV-positive, while at least double that number are believed to be infected. Dr. Dolores Mani Inyani, who leads the district HIV response team, blames ignorance for many refusing to be tested or dismissing test results.
They have beliefs that HIV and AIDS is a disease of Ugandans, and it may not affect them as South Sudanese.
Refugee flows to and from Uganda make checking the spread of HIV a challenge. Dr. Patrick Adrani is the coordinator of the NGO Medical Teams International.
When you start somebody on treatment, they first go to Sudan, the other side, so they come back after some time when they are very ill. So it becomes very difficult in terms of control. Also, again, that has contributed to resistance.
Two-thirds of HIV-positive refugees are women whose families rely on them for a dowry payment from a prospective husband when they marry.
So once you diagnose a female as having HIV, it's like you are depriving them of having wealth from this affected woman. But we have had scenarios where it became very difficult for the counselors to declare results to some of these communities, especially the females.
Ugandan health workers say the challenge is in educating the uninformed and those in denial on the need for treatment to prevent HIV from spreading to more vulnerable refugees. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Adjumani, Uganda.
Health experts from Regional Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, are urging member countries to intensify control on the movement of drugs. They say a lack of proper control mechanisms results in circulation of hazardous counterfeit drugs and medicines. Research conducted last year cites Somalia as one of the countries with poor drug administration mechanisms and says that contributes to high morbidity rates. Reporter Magume Davis Rawakaringi files this report from Kampala.
The 2018 USAID sponsored research focused on oxytocin injections and amoxicillin disposable tablets in 6 IGAD member countries, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, Sudan, and Uganda. While presenting the findings this week, Fatuma Adan, who heads the IGAD Health and Social Division, said some of these products spotted on the market were found to be below standard.
The survey showed that 21% of oxytocin injection samples tested did not meet quality specifications. This means that women who may need this product during childbirth may be exposed to substandard medicines which may not be as effective as quality assured products.
The survey found out that about 58% of oxytocin injection products circulating across border areas were not registered by relevant national regulatory authorities. Adan says, unfortunately, women and children are more vulnerable to these products.
We need to look at the quality of medicines that saves the lives of mothers and children who are living at the cross-border areas of our 8 of all the IGAD countries. This is as a result of the fact that we have high maternal mortality and infant mortality in our region, and specifically those living in the cross-border areas, those ones who are moving across the borders, the pastoralists, the refugees, and the returnees.
Anthony Toroitich, the IGAD Medicine Regulatory and Harmonization Specialist, agrees.
There is a risk that this product that is substandard is being used to a patient. So when they say they're going to deliver, it will not stop bleeding. So that's why we are saying it's important that these cross-border sites are being managed well by regulatory authorities, and we are trying to say this is the problem. Please, can you put in more effort to improve the quality of the products that are in the market?
Toroitich says poor quality is caused by various factors such as poor storage and poor transportation. He says the IGAD member countries will quarantine the affected products and recall them from the market. Nasa Lubowa, who works as the post-market surveillance officer at Uganda Drug Authority, says all the IGAD countries must work together to overcome this problem.
When we meet is that we create joint harmonization programs, first of all, in terms of post-market surveillance. We are able to track products on the market moving along all the countries in the region, and then we alert each other, sharing information with regards to this quality of medicines, such that we are able to enforce at once.
According to IGAD, circulation of unregulated, substandard and illegal medicines within member states poses what they say is a serious public health threat. They also fear that this threat, unless prevented, will undermine confidence in public health care programs. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The LGBTI community in the African continent has been celebrating the recent decriminalization of same-sex activities in Botswana after the High Court ruled that law prohibiting homosexual relations was unconstitutional. Reporter Kuzai Zinawashi looks at what lessons Zimbabwe can borrow from the landmark ruling.
Chesterfield Samba, the director of Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, says the Botswana ruling inspires hope.
But I think it gives hope for Africa that a lot is happening, particularly in affording LGBTI people in Africa their dignity that has been lost to these colonial laws. You'll find that the tide is changing.
Samba says political parties in other African countries could learn a lot from the Botswana court ruling.
The political party, mainly the ruling party in Botswana, came out strongly in support of the judgment. And I think that was very sobering in that you find in the history of the LGBTI movement in Africa, it's the ruling parties that are very vocal and speaking against support for LGBTI recognition in places where LGBTI people are trying to fight for their rights.
He adds that the argument during the court case speak volumes.
The arguments that were made for decriminalization are very basic issues, really, looking at equality and how we want to protect rights of minorities, how we want to uphold the rights to privacy. And really, when we're saying the state has no business between the conduct of consensual adults and, in this case, gay and lesbian conduct.
Samba says rights are often based on morality, yet morality is relative. He adds that in Zimbabwe, the Criminal Codification Act has sections that criminalize same-sex relationships. Legal issues aside, the public perception of gays and lesbians in Zimbabwe has often left the LGBTI community subject to stigma and discrimination, something that they have former President Robert Mugabe to thank for. But his strong view against gays and lesbians came with some positive change.
In the history of the movement, we had a very vocal political leader in the form of the former President Robert Mugabe, who really took the lead of the issue of homosexuality in this country. And for us, we actually credit him for his ambassadorial role that he played in terms of also raising the profile of LGBTI issues. So now we have to work around the stigma that that kind of negative rhetoric that persistently played out in Zimbabwe during his administration.
Samba says the LGBTI movement has a task to change public perception, and the new ruling provides a safe legal framework to engage communities. He adds that Zimbabwe faces the same predicament but does not have supporting legal structure. The blossoming hope in the LGBTI movement in Africa comes after a severe blow. On the 24th of May, the Kenyan court upheld the colonial era laws that criminalize homosexuality. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
17 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Truckers from Cameroon are crossing into the Central African Republic again after the CAR government convinced rebels to release abducted drivers. The truckers provide an important lifeline to the landlocked CAR, as Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the border town of Garoua Bulai.
Cameroonian truckers cautiously resumed routes into the Central African Republic this week after CAR authorities persuaded rebels last Friday to release drivers they took hostage. 3 weeks ago, the rebels abducted 10 Cameroonian drivers along with 3 female passengers as they returned from the CAR capital Bangui. The security incident halted truck deliveries from Cameroon, a serious matter for the landlocked CAR, which depends on Cameroon's Douala seaport for about 95% of its supplies. Ali Abubakar was one of the abducted drivers who returned Monday to Cameroon. He says armed rebels had taken them far into the bush.
En sortant de Bangui, on est en train de rouler subitement. Les rebels sont sortis.
He says after 3 days, the rebels released the 3 women and asked them to tell CAR authorities that the drivers they were looking for were being held. After his release, Abubakar says he told CAR authorities that he and his fellow drivers would no longer drive across the border without an escort for fear of being abducted. While no formal announcement was made, a reporter saw United Nations peacekeeping troops this week escorting the trucks. An official with the Douala Bangui Truckers Union, Issa Adamu, says some truckers are still reluctant to return to work.
We call all our comrades to start work and to continue work without any fear, because we'll continue discussing with government in order to achieve more.
CAR official Lamido Issa B. Amadu brought Abubakar back to Cameroon. He says the abductions indicate there are still pockets of rebels resisting a peace deal.
Rien ne peut justifier de la part de nos frères.
He says he is very happy that the rebel group heeded the call of the CAR government and freed both Cameroonian and Central African Republic hostages. But Amadou says nothing can justify why his countrymen should be abducting people who are simply helping to transport humanitarian and basic goods to their landlocked country. Maximin Mokom is the CAR Minister for Disarmament, Demobilization and Reinsertion. He says some rebel groups are angry that President Faustin Archange Touadéra appointed members from only 6 of the 14 groups that signed a February peace deal as ministers.
Après l'accord de Khartoum qu'on a signé en Bangui le 6 février 2019,
he says it is rather unfortunate that some rebel leaders are refusing to respect the terms of the peace accord they signed with the government in Bangui on February 6, 2019, as a follow-up to the negotiated peace deal in Khartoum. The United Nations brokered peace deal raised hopes for stability in the volatile Central African Republic after decades of armed conflict. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Garoua Boulaye, Eastern Cameroon.
A group of South African teenagers has assembled a 4-seater airplane and is flying it across the continent. Aviation experts consider this a significant feat, one that will inspire teens who want to be pilots, engineers, or anything else. Maryse de Klerk reports from Akinof, South Africa.
I was too lazy to study biology, and then my imagination started going. And then I was like, okay, let's fly a plane across Africa.
17-year-old Megan Werner is now a pilot, even though she doesn't have a driver's license yet. Her U-Dream Global non-profit helped a diverse group of 20 African teenagers assemble a light aircraft. Werner and some of her colleagues left Cape Town this week for a round-trip flight to Cairo with stops in 11 countries along the way.
If you're a teenager and you already built a plane, you can say to yourself, well, I built a plane when I was a teenager. What else can I do? And then for the teenagers flying it across Africa, just to be able to make a difference and show people what is possible is really inspiring.
Agnes Simela helped to assemble the fuselage for this kit aircraft, which the teens built under qualified adult supervision.
I know for a fact that my team did their best, their absolute best, and I'm very confident that this airplane will make it to Cairo and back.
During the maiden flight event, the South African teens saw their plane take to the air for the first time.
We built that! That's our baby!
Aspiring pilot Lesego Nkwasheng is now even more interested in aviation after also learning about building aircraft by being part of the U-Dream Global assembling team.
Seeing that now it's no longer like about like adult people engaging in this industry, but also young people can get involved in such projects, I think it's going to inspire a lot of people to actually join aviation.
With both her parents working in aviation, Werner's interest in flying is no surprise. Her father, Des Werner, an airline pilot, will fly along in a second plane for the trip from southern to northern Africa and back.
The plane is crazy enough. It doesn't need to be that crazy that my daughter must fly across Africa by herself. So I thought, no, I'll go and check that she's okay. Because I've got a bit more experience than what she has. And I'm there just to support them to make the right decisions.
The stuff that we need to carry along with us on this trip, I mean, we've got tires in here and we've got inner tubes.
The other adult pilot, Werner Vroeneman, is the U-Dream Global Project Director and coach. He will also follow the teens on their cross-continental journey.
Obviously, fatigue plays a big role that we need to manage with the students so that we can make sure that they are always awake, that they're always sharp to be able to make the right decisions. This is going to stretch their limits.
The hands-on involvement by teenagers can only help Africa's aviation industry, says Ethel France, editor of African Pilot magazine.
Because the older guys like myself have to realize that young people are going to replace us, and the better skilled they are, and the more they know, and the more excited they are about aviation, the better for aviation in the world.
The UDREAM Global team will travel some 12,000 kilometers during the round-trip flight. Along the way, they'll take other teenagers up in the plane to inspire them to also reach for greater heights. Marise de Klerk for VOA News, Akenhof, South Africa.
Thousands of opposition supporters protested in Malawi to push for the resignation of the chairperson of the country's electoral commission. The protesters accuse Jean Ansah of helping to rig the May 21st elections. In the capital Lilongwe, the demonstrators forced their way into government buildings and vandalized portraits of President Peter Mutharika. Lamek Masina reports.
Nearly 15,000 opposition supporters brought business to a standstill in the capital, Lilongwe, as they marched to the Capitol Hill, the seat of government offices. They wanted to present a petition demanding the resignation of Electoral Commission Chief Jean Ansah. However, government representatives stayed in their offices. Human Rights Defenders Forum Deputy Chairperson Gift Trapens said protesters will maintain the pressure until Ansah resigns.
If she's not resigning, we are coming back into the streets. When we are back into the streets, we are not going anywhere. We'll have vigils even at our own house.
The Malawi Electoral Commission denies any vote rigging in the May 21 election. The MEC declared Mutharika won the re-election with 39% of the vote, while opposition Malawi Congress Party leader Lazarus Chakwera was a close second with 35%. Vice President Saulos Chilima was third with 20%. Both Chakwera and Chilima, who are challenging the results in court, joined the Thursday protests. Chilima spoke to reporters.
This is about Malawi. Dr. Chakwera is Malawian. I am Malawian. So we have joined fellow Malawians to demonstrate against evil. We are not happy with the way the elections were managed, and therefore we have to demonstrate and show that we are not happy.
Chakwera said he participated for the sake of solidarity.
This is our constitutional mandate. The court issue does not mean it's an either or. It's both and people are free to demonstrate according to our constitution.
The demonstration was not entirely peaceful. Some protesters forced their way into the parliament building, where they pulled down national flags and Mutharika's portrait. In the meantime, the protesters have vowed to prevent Mutharika from opening parliament on Friday until court issues are concluded. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Africa, I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.